Hello and welcome to the show that is only ever written and performed after three tubs of Brain Force Plus. On today's show, we're having a championship special. There's a lot of ground to cover, but we've got one of the hardest working and most knowledgeable broadcasters in the business here to help us. And she'll be joined by Matt Stanger. Matt was at Griffin Park on Saturday to witness a continuation of Leeds United's alarming collapse. What is going on over there? Indeed, what's going on everywhere in the Championship? We've been gorging ourselves on videos this weekend, and we'll do our best to make sense of it all. There's none of the usual stuff today. No history lessons, no travel and ticket details, no fan league, and no real plan. We're just swallowing hard, holding hands, and hurling ourselves into the cold embrace of infinite darkness. It's all on the Totally Football League Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. It's Caroline Barker from my hometown of Chelmsford.
Oh, yeah. It's not a town, it's a city now.
Oh, yeah. Things changed since I left.
The football club was always called City.
Yes.
And now, of course, the town has become the city.
Does that mean that the club now has to change to Chelmsford Town?
No.
Okay, well, that's...
Well, unless we do one of those Phoenix things, but that's Could not going to happen. That very nearly did happen this
really?
Summer. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I don't know if you're ready for that.
No,
I mean,
not
we're talking
yet.
About Championship and we're so far off the Championship at the moment. Although we have new owners and who knows, old five-year plan.
We spoke about the Essex non-league scene off-air before the show and that's where it shall stay because it's very exciting.
I think that's a big miss for everyone.
Yeah,
really.
Obviously we're gutted we're going to have to replace it with Championship football, but we'll have to do a podcast on that ourselves. Caroline, of course, you were a director at Chelmsford City. You've worked for BBC Essex, BBC London, BBC World Service and BBC Radios 2, 4 and 5. No Radio 3 yet?
I had a little go at Radio 3.
Did you?
Yeah, we did something on World Cup theme tunes.
Nice.
So I think I was on there briefly. No. But it's nothing on you lot.
What is your favourite World Cup theme tune?
I have many. I shouldn't perhaps get onto the subject of World Cup theme tunes because I was fortunate enough to be on Fighting Talk at the weekend on 5 Live. And there were at least 10 emails pointing out to Colin Murray that he said the wrong year for Whitney Houston's One Moment in Time, which was actually 88 Olympics, rather than I think he said, I don't know what he would have said.
Must have gone
early.
For 94.
Yeah, and so from that point forth, I know that I should not talk about theme tunes in any shape or form, apart from the fact I can play Howard's Way on the Ocarina.
That is a useful skill.
Yeah.
We'll see where the show goes and see if we can fit it in. Listeners to this show will, of course, know you best for your co-presenting role on Channel 5's Football League Tonight. That must be a really hard show to work on. I always think when I watch it, it must be really difficult because you've got so much going on and, like, no time to prepare.
Co-presenting is such a loose term, isn't it? I try and open my mouth at the right time and get the words out in the right way. It's one of those joys, isn't it? You get to sit there on a Saturday afternoon and watch every single match, or at least to try to watch every single match. So you're in a huge bank of screens in front of you. You've got a couple of matches that you're focusing on, the key matches that you're looking at for that day. And then someone will shout, go! And they don't shout where it is. And you're saying, is it Burton? You've just got, you know, which of the screens you're going to look at next? And trying to focus on yours too. But there is one of those real delights, I think, with the Championship, with League One and League Two at the moment, is that there are stories happening all over the place. Not just goals, not just sendings off. We could perhaps talk about the officials and what people's thoughts are on those. I mentioned I was coming on this morning. First tweet I had was, can you talk about the standard of officials? And yeah, maybe we won't get into that. So it's one of those real joys. But for me, I think it's shown just how expressive fans of the Football League are. I spent many years at BBC London covering just the Football League. And London's such a rich vein of Football League clubs, of course. But yeah, to hear the thoughts of most fans on where you've got them in the running order every week, which Colin bats back spectacularly well, that is the one true joy in life.
Well, talking of co-presenters, Matt Stanger.
Good morning.
Hello. You went to Brentford at the weekend, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Saw a cracking game between Brentford and Leeds.
But more importantly, did you go and find the pubs, one pub at every corner of the stadium?
I did, and I had a pint in each one, Ian.
Did you?
No.
Very professional, upholding our standards.
Did you not? I've done that.
Have you?
I've done the... Well, and I don't drink beer, so that was quite an
effort.
What
did you drink?
I did drink beer.
Oh, right, gotcha.
But didn't enjoy drinking beer. But it's one of those stadiums that you go to at Griffin Park where you know it's there, you can see it on the horizon if you're looking up hard enough, but it's still just a beauty of a stadium.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's nestled in behind all of the rows of terraced houses and everything. And yeah, it feels like a proper old stadium, but they're actually moving, aren't they, to a new one in 2019. So this talk, I think, of building four pubs on the corner of the ground again to try and keep it sort of authentic.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, you could kind of make them, you know, thematic. You could have a kind of lightning rod, like lager place. You could have a nice craft ale thing, maybe a little cocktail bar, maybe a little wine bar.
We should be an Irish bar, because London Irish are going to share the stadium.
Ah, there you go. That's thinking ahead. Listen, we're going to have to get on with this because we've got a lot of stuff to cover. So let's start with the roundup, the only regular feature to survive today's cull, purely because I like the music. Play that music. Would Wolves wobble after that QPR defeat? Would they, Bobbins? They did Norwich in midweek, and then they made short work of Fulham on Friday. They are 2 points clear now, and they're 2 points clear of Sheffield United, who moved to second with a thumping 4-1 win over Hull. All four goals scored by peripatetic hitman Leon Clark. And Middlesbrough, they've moved into the playoff places after their victory over the haunted, feckless fractions of men that currently make up the Sunderland first team. Matt.
Adam Reach thumped in a 25-yard volley in the opening minute to set Sheffield Wednesday on the way to a 2-1 win at Aston Villa. The Villains lost John Terry to a snap metatarsal in the first half, and fear he could now be out for up to 12 weeks. It hurts us more than it hurts you, was Birmingham defender Harley Dean's message to Blues fans, as Steve Cottrell's side slumped to a third defeat in four matches to drop into the bottom three. And Bolton moved off the foot of the table with a 2-1 win over wobbling Norwich. First half goals from Guy Medine and Adam Armstrong secured 3 points for the Trotters as the Canaries suffered a third straight defeat.
Bad day for Norwich, good day for Ipswich. Happy fifth anniversary to Mick McCarthy. And yes, it was very happy. They smashed Preston right up, 3-0 at Portman Road. Nottingham Forest went one step further, beating QPR 4-0 at the City Ground. They're all the way up to ninth now. And Burton Albion are out of the drop zone. They scored with their only shot of the day and beat Millwall 1-0.
It's now six defeats in seven games for Leeds after they were brushed aside by Brentford at Griffin Park. Goalkeepers Andy Lonergan and Daniel Bentley traded gifts to make it 1-1, before Johan Barbe and Ryan Woods snatched the points for the Bees. The mind boggles to think what Cardiff striker Omar was doing when he lunged into a late tackle on Bristol City's Marlon Pack to win a straight red card at Ashton Gate. Bogle had earlier put the Bluebirds back on level terms, following Callum Dowder's opener. And it was a coupon buster at Derby where the Rams' four-game winning run came to an abrupt halt with a 4-2 defeat to Reading.
Right, let's start at the top of the table, shall we, with Wolverhampton Wanderers. Caroline, we spent most of the show a couple of weeks ago blowing smoke up Wolverhampton Wanderers' bottoms. Have you been similarly impressed by them?
Every week you see something of the spectacular with Wolves, don't you? There have been spectacular, perhaps, wobbles in that too for them. From the very start of the season, you thought, right, is this going to be one of those sides where the cold nights draw in? When I say you thought, there was perhaps the headline writers were going with that. Can they do it on a cold night? And they have. And they've managed to do that. Just that one defeat in the middle of those two wins either side. On my favourites, I have the sackrace.com. I don't know if you go on that. And I was having a look at it today. And just you mentioning Ipswich, Mick McCarthy, 5 years and 5 days has a beautiful ring to it. When you look at Wolves and Nuno and what he's doing there, 5 months, 7 days to turn things around, to go in, to get everyone thinking in your way, to bring those players in, to get them to gel. Yes, they've got brilliant fans behind them. They're going to push them forward. Yes, they've got fantastic infrastructure with the grounds and the training as well coming up to that level. So they've got everything set. But how many times before have we seen managers walk in with that footing and just go poof, and blow it out the window? Yeah. Perhaps we'll get onto Sunderland later. But, you know, they've got everything. They've got everything. And for him to come and do it just shows perhaps the level of him.
It's funny because at the beginning of the season, people saw the Chinese owners, Mendes, Nuno, saw all of the links and thought, well, that's a recipe for disaster. Mm. But it's actually kind of saved them this week, because in any other circumstances, with a link to Everton, you kind of expect the manager to be interested. But there's no way on God's earth he's going, is there? He's
because so of tied Mendes.
Up in, yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They're all tied up in this together, so there's no point.
And he must have had some assurances when he walks in with Mendes there as well, that this was a part of the project and part of the plan and where they wanted to be. So, yeah, why would you go? Why would you go into a potentially explosive situation elsewhere when you're on the cusp of going up and doing everything to go up and stay up as well, which, of course, as a manager, has got to be something that you look to. It's got to be the old Rafa Benitez situation, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, Matt, they really made short work of Fulham, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, two carbon copy goals, and it was a pretty straightforward victory. I think, like Caroline says, the fact that he's gone in there and he pressed his method so quickly and switched that back three, which, you know, it's quite a tricky system to get teams playing, especially if you're not familiar with that. And they put Connor Cody back in the centre defence. And they're the only team, actually, to stop Man City scoring in 90 minutes this season with that draw in the League Cup before City won a penalty.
That wasn't even their first choice team as well.
No, it wasn't. And City had Gabriel Jesus and Sergio Aguero starting, yeah. So to keep them quiet is amazing.
I do think, and it's probably the case with Fulham as well, I think the Wolves like playing that type of side. They like to play a side that maybe is going to come at them too, or try and match them with ability-wise, which Wolves can more than stand up to that kind of those flair players and that style of football.
Yeah, they're very confident at the moment, aren't they? And I think, like you say, they like to be drawn out a little bit and be drawn into a battle.
Talking of confidence, Fulham have got none. They needed five games before they got their first win of the season, but they've only won four since then, and they haven't won a game in five. We're talking about potentially explosive situations. They've got that off the pitch as well. Caroline, what's gone wrong with Fulham?
I don't know, because in Slav we trust. There's a couple of Fulham fans that moved up to Salford when the BBC did the move, and they've formed this kind of collective against the might of the Manchester teams around them in Salford. And I've tried to persuade them to go and watch a non-league team up there, and they're like, no, we're focusing on Fulham, it will come well. And he's the type of manager, when you talk to him, I don't know if you've been fortunate enough to go along and to meet him, he gives you that air of, yeah, I'd want to follow you. I believe in what you're saying. It's a bit, unfortunately, like the Bilic situation, in that he talks a good game, he engages you, he's intelligent. You feel like he's one of those managers that can get it and can change things up. But talking to a couple of the Fulham fans, and they just said, we don't know. We don't know what seems to be the matter. All the ingredients are there,
yeah,
and it's just not working.
I think he'd almost take this slow start to the season to have Craig Klein leave the club, wouldn't he? Because clearly there's quite a bit of friction there, and now it's gone in his favour.
I mean, I think the real problem is that they could have solved all of that trouble earlier on had they just worn the sumo outfits. Yeah, that would have won us all over straight away. That's one of the more remarkable press strategies I've ever heard.
Yeah, the weirdest thing about that, I think, was that Jurcanovic was meant to wear the sumo outfit underneath his suit and sit in a press conference. How would it not be noticed?
Surely be dripping with sweat and twice his usual width.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure he thought that through. And that may not be the only thing that he failed to think through.
Just remembering an 18th birthday party where we all went in sumo suits and ended up on a bouncy castle stuck on our backs.
A metaphor, if you will, for Fulham's season thus far.
Possibly. I think they will right themselves. Yeah,
they would. This is the thing. You watch them play and they're playing very well. You know, they're just not winning games.
But it's a brilliant league with fantastic teams in there. And this kind of divine right, because you're a big name who's been in the Premier League, to get back up and to go through it, it's just not there, because there's all those other teams that are capable of doing it in front of you.
Do you think now the friction's gone behind the scenes, do you think that's going to, you know, ease the mood?
Something was unsettling, wasn't
yes.
it? And yeah, we don't like a bit of friction.
Matt Shahid Khan, he's come in after about 10 years of prosperity and stability in the Premier League, and they've almost instantly been relegated, and they don't seem to be coming back this season at the moment. He needs us to turn around, doesn't he? Because the fans are going to start turning on him soon.
Yeah, probably, although his biggest focus is his NFL team, isn't it, I think? Especially at the moment with everything that's going on over there. And yeah, he made some bad managerial appointments. Fitz McGaff, who thought he could fix a knee injury with cheese. And
really, I'm no scientist. Let's not rule it out yet.
And then they had Mitroglou. Do you remember him? They signed him for 11 million. And he went on to win the Portuguese league with Benfica. I think he scored the winning goal in that title.
Yeah, they never played him at Fulham, did they?
No.
Very odd. Very odd. Let's move to happier places. Let's move to Sheffield, and Sheffield United in particular, who just for a moment looked to be in trouble, 1-0 down at home to Hull, and then all of a sudden really, really weren't. Leon Clark scoring four. I love watching Sheffield United at the moment. I think that there's a thing with Chris Wilder, because of, you know, he's born and bred Blade, Yorkshire man, talks about character and the group a lot. So you just, your brain makes those connections and you think, oh, well, that'll be 4-4-2, big lad, little lad up top. And it's not. It's this very, very fluid back three that never really looks like a back three, because wherever the need is, the men are. It's all so I hesitate to use the phrase total football in connection with Sheffield United, but it's definitely leaning in that direction, isn't it?
And every week, you'll know this, Matt, that there's a Chris Wilder stat that he's broken something or something else has happened. I don't mean broken someone's elbow. That's probably how he gets them to play. I'm going to break it. No, he doesn't do that. But he is one of those managers that just consistently gets it right. And again, you look at all these so-called bigger jobs that come up in the league above. I don't mean bigger as in bigger team, but given position where they are in the pyramid. It is one of those things that you think, well, when's he going to get another shot at a big side, and who's going to take that trick on him next? There's talk if Sean Dyche leaves Burnley, whether he'd go in there, and it's not a bigger club, is it? Or is it?
There's a strong argument, and there's no way of getting around this without me getting in all sorts of trouble. But I mean, Sheffield United are a really big club.
Yeah.
They've all the facilities and everything. Chris could be forgiven for looking at Burnley, even with Premier League stability, and thinking, well, yeah, that's a smaller job. That's not even a sideways step.
And I'm sure Sheffield United fans would say that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's more Sheffield United fans than Burnley fans. So I think in this stance, I'm going to be safe.
I think you'll be all right.
Yeah.
Burnley can still spend £15 million on Chris Wood in the summer. So,
yeah,
you know, it's like the difference in budgets, the difference in his personal circumstances, perhaps what his reward might be for moving up to the Premier League.
What would you do? If it was me, I'd stay at Sheffield United.
I would 100% stay at Sheffield United, yeah.
Caroline?
But it sounds like you don't think he will.
I know, I just think that there's plenty of temptation there, and it's something that he would have to consider. And I think football fans, you know, as much as they care about their team and that's the main thing to them, I think they have to understand why people make these career moves, because we all do it in our lives, don't we?
Yeah.
You've been hurt in the past, haven't you?
I'm not leaving I told you.
No, I'm thinking Shearer. That's where this is coming from, isn't it?
Yeah,
Shearer.
Well, going back to his home club, and
yeah,
if he'd left to Man United, I think Blackburn fans were taking it a lot worse. But the fact that he went to Newcastle and didn't win a single thing, that was fine.
You'll never love again, will you? That went dark really quickly.
I was just uncomfortably shifting in my seat then, away from you.
Let's move to something else uncomfortable and have a look at Hull. Chris Dunleavy's piece in the Football League paper this weekend. Football League paper, £1.50. Buy it. It's got several good excuses from Leonard Slutsky for Hull's form, and then one that he says 70% of the squad basically missed pre-season. Fine, that's a good one. We only started to gel after 5 matches. Fine, that's a good one. We need lots of data to scan for recognising recovery time. Okay, a bit technical. That makes sense. And then, I watched a lot of matches last season, but mainly at Fulham. It wasn't a good reflection because at the time Fulham played very well and had a serious advantage. So it came as a big surprise when every team was so tough. I'm not sure he's helped himself there.
No, point one, to back him up, I would say that it's great to hear from the managers and hear their reasoning behind it. But it's an owner-manager thing, which is never great with Hull. But you have to see what is their long-term ambition, what's their long-term plan. And this is why I always think that the board should be honest and say, right, we're going to give him, how long's he had? 4 months? Over 4 months? We're going to give him the whole season. As long as we don't go down, it's fine. And the next season, we go and build to implement what he wants to do. But it's that point at which you look and think, yeah, he didn't need to say that at the end. Why have you gone and shot yourself in your foot right at the end? He has a difficult task anywhere there, and the fans perhaps when he walks in went, who are you and what's happening?
Yeah, it's like he's almost angling for a payoff already, isn't it? Because like last week he said he'd understand if he was sacked at this stage. So it strikes me that he's not really enjoying it. And he had a difficult recruitment process in the summer as well. You met him actually in the summer, didn't you? What did you think of him?
Well, I was really surprised by these quotes because when we spoke, he had watched a lot of football and he spoke a lot about how the league was kind of distinguished by the fact that you could go on a run of 6 great games and then have a run of 6 awful games because everyone was pretty much at a level. So I'm not sure if they've just caught him in a bad mood or, you know, maybe some kind of second language type issue, because it seemed to me that no one could be more prepared for the task that had taken on.
I don't buy that. You know, as a manager, even as a player, and this is why I don't know why clubs don't send their players out to the wolves more often, as it were. You know you're going to be interviewed in those situations, pre, post, this a proper sit down. You know you're going to come up, those are the sorts of questions you're going to be asked. So regardless of any language barrier, you know what you want to say and you should have
it's
that.
It's just really, really out of character and completely in contrast with what he said to me in the summer. But I mean, I would imagine he's not particularly happy there. He was warned, it should be said.
Mm.
what a difficult job that was going to be because of the ownership and the recent history.
Did you get any sense of what he'd been told he was expected to achieve and over what time?
I got the sense that he wanted the challenge more than, you know, the realism.
Well, he's getting the challenge now.
Yeah, he certainly is, because they are only just above the relegation zone, despite having had some very good performances, which would make me think they're probably not going to fall all the way into the third division.
Yeah, it's not all bad news for them as well. They've got Jared Bowen, who's broken through this season, and he's having a great campaign. 8 goals in 16 matches. I was looking into stats, actually. He's scored 8 goals from 26 shots, whereas Harry Kane scored 8 goals from 59 shots in the Premier League. So talk about accuracy there.
Nice.
But the fact that he's been given the chance, again, is another tick in his corner.
Absolutely. I'd stick with him. I think he's a very good manager, and he probably should have started somewhere further up, or at least more stable than Hull. When we come back after the break, we will be having a look at Bristol City. Who saw that coming?
Listeners, you like stats, and so do I. So have a bang on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone razor don't go back to their old one. I know! Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally.
Okay, someone help me out here. Last season, Bristol City, not that far from relegation. Lee Johnson, the target of serious protests from the supporters. It all looked kind of done. And now Bristol City are fourth, and they beat Cardiff. What changed over the summer?
Well, he's now become Lee Johnson. I didn't do the fan chant right, but that's obviously what's changed. Bristol City-Cardiff was... we all talked about it as being a marker for the season. They happen every week, it would seem. But here's another marker for the season. You've got in Neil Warnock, the old Wiley manager, who seemingly is a little bit irritated. He's blaming everyone but himself at the moment, players for getting sent off, the officials for sending off the players. And you know, everything seems to have a little bit of a on it. And Lee Johnson, with his Bristol City side, from the how many times have you mentioned the gifts already this season, but right from everywhere, the backroom staff, the press people involved, everyone seems to be enjoying it.
Yeah.
And enjoying the football. And I think that seems to be the difference.
It's not happened there much over the years, that level of enjoyment.
No, but every Bristol City fan you ever meet, you tend to like. I mean, feel free to get in touch those that you don't like. But I'm trying to think now how many Bristol City fans I've met in my lifetime. But I've enjoyed each of their company. And I think maybe that's now coming across.
It is my view, by the way, that all West Country fans are great. Every time West Country fans come to Southend, that's like the happiest non-conflict day you'll ever get. They're all just really happy and cool.
And that's how you judge the level of your football match on how much conflict there is on the terraces. Yeah, but I would agree with you. Had they ever been down to Chelmsford, I'm sure it would be a similar sort of thing.
Give it time.
Yeah, Lee Johnson has always been one of those, again, a good talker. Talk's a good game, and I like to think that we're seeing that reflected now in what he's putting out on the pitch. Is it an element of surprise? I don't know. I think it's just that they're all working for one another.
I think they've got those classic traits of a feel-good factor, haven't they? They've got Bobby Reid, local lad, who's having the season of his career.
Everything he touches goes in.
Yeah, they've got Aidan Flint, goal-scoring defender, and then they know how to sign strikers, don't they? They've got Jed Judy signed in the summer, and he's already got 6 goals for them. So they've put all together all the ingredients.
Is it true that everyone is now just trying to score from anywhere on the pitch because they all want their gift to go up?
They've really gone to town, the social media team, haven't they?
Yeah, Johnson tweeted on Saturday night, didn't he, to clarify that it wasn't him spinning the plates in Aidan Flint's gear.
And as good on the road as they are at home as well. 15 points at home, 15 points away. So nicely settled. Cardiff, they are still unbeaten at home, but they do seem to be fading a little, the early pace setters. They've always seemed to be a team sort of built on strength and pace more than anything else. Are they regressing now to the natural position?
I think they will be in the playoffs come the end, and I think they're one of those sides that you don't want to face in the playoffs. So I think that's actually could be in their favour. Out of all those teams that you could face in there, with at the moment Cardiff, Bristol, Middlesbrough and Villa in there, out of those, I would see Cardiff coming through any four-way shootout between those four teams. That's not how it's going to end the end of the season, the teams below that are coming up and through. But I just think they stick in those playoffs, they'll go up.
It's a hell of an Indian summer for Neil Warnock, isn't it? Because I think most of us thought he was pretty much done.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to let them fade too much, though, is he? I think part of the problem is Mendes Lang isn't in the form that he started the season in. Scored four in his first four games, hasn't scored since, and he went off injured after 7 minutes against the Bristol City. Mm. So they need to get him firing again. And if you look at like this, you know, the stats that sort of underline the style of play, they have fourth lowest possession, second lowest passing accuracy. They play a certain style. It's very pragmatic, as you expect from Neil Warnock. Like Caroline says, I think they'll have enough really to be around the playoffs at the end of the season.
He wants that eighth promotion, would it be? Record
that's
eight?
Extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, he wants that. And I think he's been in charge, start of October, he'd been in for over a year. And I think his stats are sort of phenomenal as to what he's achieved over that year time. And I think he probably would have gone up had that been a full season over that time. So, yeah, Neil Warnock will get it right. It's just at what point that the kind of grumpy turns into the successful again.
All right, there we go. We're back in Cardiff for the playoffs. Let's move on to someone else who's in the playoffs, Aston Villa, who actually lost at home to Sheffield Wednesday. I tell you what, if you want entertainment in the Midlands, you want to get down to the Glee Club on Wednesday this week, where there are a handful of tickets, and I stress handful of tickets. So if you do fancy coming and listening to some football-type conversation with James Richardson, get down to the Glee Club on Wednesday night. Second best entertainment in that part of town is probably Aston Villa. But that was a terrible start on Saturday, wasn't it?
I don't like Aston Villa. I like Aston Villa as a club now.
Right.
I like the fans now, but I used to date an Aston Villa fan who every weekend would make me go and watch Villa when I wanted to be at Chelmsford City. And for that reason alone, there was always a wry smile when they lost. That has gone now. I'm over it.
Okay. Entirely justified.
I'm over it. It was justified at the time. I wanted to be in Essex and I was up watching Aston Villa. John Terry, how big a miss is he going to be now?
Yes.
For the rest of the season or however long he's done and dusted. He was a slow starter, another slow burner, but he just seemed to instill a bit of confidence at the back in the last few games.
First evidence of any kind of professionalism in that team for some time, wasn't it?
He was doing a job, and I just worry about how that change may affect them now. And
Matt,
again, it's look at all those teams in and around there too, and the upcoming matches. I just think Villa are going to find it tough to get automatic promotion.
Matt, John Terry's a kind of multiplier on everyone around him. Is Chris Samba?
Well, he's brilliant at Blackburn and he scored when he came on at the weekend to almost put them back in it at the last couple of minutes there.
Yeah.
He was a real leader of men at Blackburn, and there were lots of games where we were under the caution. He managed to keep the defence in it, but I don't think he's really going to be able to do the same job at Villa because his legs have gone a bit. He's not the player he was when we had him.
It'd be interesting to see, though, how John Terry is now used. Because there was talk about him being a leader, so whether he's used off the pitch more now and whether he can maintain that level of input that he had at Villa.
They're a funny team, though, aren't they? They get into a good little groove and then they slip up inexplicably.
I don't think they've really been in a groove for three or four matches in a row. I remember when they beat Barnsley early in the season, they completely walked all over them, but Barnsley had a bit of an off day. It was a bit of a stinker for them at Oakwell. And I don't think Aston Villa have showed much fluency in the way they play. The strikers haven't really been scoring. They've got only four goals from recognised strikers, just one for Kodjia this season after he came back from his ankle injury, whereas Hourihan and Adoma have five each. So, you know, they've been creating all of the chances there and they need someone. Kenan Davis has done well, but someone to step up and start banging them in.
There's a point in case in Steve Bruce, a year he's been at Aston Villa now. How many times have there been questions over him? We always used to have this conversation at boardroom level, albeit in non-league football, all right, fine. But how long do you give a manager just to work things out, to work the club out, to work out the players that he needs to come into, to work the league out, and all of those elements that go into whether you get rid of a manager? And I guess that's where you go back to Sunderland, down the bottom of the table. But how long you give someone just to work things out when they've been there, done it before, and clearly got the pedigree?
I tell you what, it'll get even more tricky as well with John Terry sitting in the shadows.
Yeah.
And that will be raised at some point if the form doesn't get back on. But I tell you what, I can hear the screaming of Sheffield Wednesday fans in my ears going, we won! Talk about us! So let's talk about them. Back-to-back wins for Wednesday. A nice little run of form, which has immediately followed me on the show a couple of weeks ago, saying they looked miles off the kind of team that gets in the playoffs. Carlos Carvalho needed this, didn't he?
Yeah, another one who, when we do the show on a Saturday night, you put sort of Channel 5 put tweets out about, oh, these are our featured teams, this is what we're doing. And when they were going through a bit of a stinker, there were questions again about him. And I think, bearing in mind that people say his name about four different ways.
I will do four different ways over the course of this show.
That's quite right. Notice how I'm dodging it, swerving it. hearing Colin say it is by far the best, so don't worry about that. He gets it right every time. But he's one of those managers, again, that you think, right, give them a bit of time, but what do you expect? What was the expectation from Sheffield Wednesday fans at the start of this season? Are they meeting that? Is mid-table at the moment all right? Is that where they expected to be? Again, when you look at just the quality of sides around them.
Yeah, he's really been blamed for his own success, isn't he? Because he got them into the playoffs twice, and they now expect that they should be going up automatically, or at least in the top three or four, fighting for automatic promotion.
But all those other teams that are now expecting that too, based on last season, we mentioned Fulham. You know, there's a team that expected to be in the playoffs and going up, or at least the fans did.
But such a good start here. Tell us about Adam Reach's goal.
Yeah, it was a brilliant goal, wasn't it? Yeah, the ball just kind of dropped for him, and I'm not sure if we can call it a volley. I know Michael Cox wouldn't call it a volley because it bounced first, but I think it was a volley. You know, he hit it when it was mid-flight in the air, and crashed it in. And like, it's his third goal in three games for Adam Reach now, and Jordan Rose has got 2 and 2 as well, sort of taking the burden off Gary Hooper a little bit.
And it's certainly, when you notice the kind of the roundups, Jordan Rose is constantly mentioned too. So he's getting that bit of space, bit of pace too about him. He's certainly getting those crosses in.
Yeah, Jordan Rhodes, he's a striker, very much plays on his confidence. I remember that at Blackburn, and he doesn't do a great deal in the build-up play. He'll never drop deep and never really link the play that much, but he'll just be there in the box at the end to finish the chances.
He always seems to be on the end of them.
Right, Caroline, I got a text from Matt on Saturday afternoon. It read simply, Reading are winning 3-0 at Derby. How are we meant to understand this league? It ended 4-2 to Reading, but he made his point eloquently. Derby are one of the weirdest teams in this division, aren't they?
And yet, look where they're sat, 7th. I don't know. You're right. I do not know how we are meant to understand this division. They'd gone on, what was it, 4 wins in a row? 8? Was this going to be their 8th? I think, go on, one of you correct me. Was this going to be their...
I haven't got the page up.
Someone find it.
Four wins in a row,
But I know they'd gone 4 previous to this, but I think it was 8 they were going for. Anyway, whatever it was going to be, Reading then rock up. And Reading, again, one of those sides, when you look at them and you think, they've got everything. They should be doing better than they are. And they just upset Derby. This is one of our focus games at the weekend, purely for that reason, because you'd looked at it and thought, oh, lies, damn statistics. and Derby, surely you're going to win this one.
But we looked at Reading about a month ago, and they were in a terrible run of form. They were so glacially slow in possession. The fans that we spoke to were saying, no, it's done. It's not going to get any better. But it's 3 wins from 5 now, back-to-back wins for the first time this season. Has it just started to click, Matt?
A little bit. I think the return of John Swift's been key, hasn't it?
Yeah.
He scored twice in a 3-1 win over Nottingham Forest last Tuesday, and then he set up a Luko's goal. That was the typical sort of patient build-up play we'd seen early in the season from Reading for a Luko's strike. And then it just had that pass from Swift to open it up, and a Luko's bended finish was brilliant.
But all the players, surely he just went through, I think it was about 10 players. It was so congested in the box when he got that layback from Swift too. And he's a player that you look at and he's playing with a smile on his face, and you just will him to do well, unless you're a fan of every other club that they're going up against. But you do just want him to do well. And I think that was great pressure on Stam. Another one of those managers that had this spell of pressure, and how quickly we react to that. Should he go? Get him on his way. And it just looked like that there was relief all round.
They're 18th now. Which obviously isn't what was planned at the start of the season. But they're now only 7 points off Derby, 7 points off a place in the playoffs. Could you see them charging back up the table?
I still don't think they've got enough firepower in attack. I mean,
really?
Yeah, Kurt Kermagon was top scorer last season.
Fight.
Roy Bearing scored at the weekend, obviously, but he profited from a terrible back pass from Curtis Davis. And I think that would have been Yapstam's team talk before the game on Saturday. He would have looked at Derby's form and said, look, they put four wins together and they're around the playoffs now. Why don't we do the same? Because we could do that. Fulham could do that. Barnsley could do that. Anyone could do that, as low as 18th place in the league.
Right, we've got to pick up the pace now. We've got loads more games to fit in, including the one that you were at, Brentford against Leeds, which I watched a tape of. It was a corker, actually.
Yeah, it was a brilliant game, wasn't it?
Yeah, really good fun. Leeds, though, 7 defeats in 9 now?
Yes, 6-7 in the league. Very stinky form indeed.
And this, again, the team that we watched in the opening weeks and went, well, they're definitely going up. Just worry about who's going to come second now.
But then when we did the first pod, actually, I went to see them play at Millwall and they lost 1-0. That was their first defeat. And I remember Thomas Christiansen afterwards in the press conference, he looked a little bit shell-shocked, and that's sort of lasted ever since, really.
I bet he's shell-shocked if he's been on Twitter, because the messages we were getting when we started this show were very much, hey, Leeds are back. Mm. And now already it's, we've got to get rid of him. He's gone. He doesn't know what he's doing. Now, granted, social media does tend to amplify the loudest voices. But this is a really worrying run for them.
You say it does amplify the loudest voices. When we're looking at sort of the key games at the weekend, and Leeds have featured in a couple of them, you go on both clubs' social media to see how they've described a goal. You read their match reports as well. And of course, you've watched it too. But the Leeds fans, it feels like there's been a growing bubble, a murmur, now a bubble as well. And you're right. Very much at the start of the season, they're like, Thomas Christiansen, no, we're proving ourselves. He's doing really well. All you haters are in your face. But how quickly it's turned.
I mean, let's be honest. If Chiellino was still there, he'd be toast now, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, he would.
Yeah, I'm not even joking.
No,
he'd be gone.
I was trying to find the humour in that. But I think I think you're right. And perhaps justifiably so. Had he never walked in the first place, Leeds fans would be saying. But again, just such a big club. With, you would argue, should have such great resources, have plucked this manager out, and we thought he was going to do well. We thought he was going to go in and be another silver and take things forward.
Matt, is it a confidence thing? Because earlier in the season, I mean, their game was built on defending very well and then springing out into the counter-attack. They've got lots of technical players in the final third. So it was all on the hoof football, free-flowing, one-touch kind of stuff. But once the confidence goes, it's very, very hard to get that back, isn't it, that style of football?
I don't think it is the confidence, to be honest. I think they have some confident players in there, and they've got some young players as well. Samuel Saiz, very talented forward that they signed in the summer. Ronaldo Vieira played really well in centre midfield the other day, had a couple of efforts from distance. That was probably Leeds' best chances, aside from the goal which Bentley gifted to them. But I think it's a lack of a game plan, really, and I know it's quite a big criticism to level at Christiansen, but they have Lasoga up front. He had 9 touches in the first half. That says to me that you're not using the big lump that you've got in centre forward as the target man that he's built to be. And he came off at half time, actually. He played a fewest crosses in the league per game, so they don't get balls into the box to him either. They look better with Kamar Roof almost as a false nine in the second half, and the movement complemented the likes of Saiz and Pablo Hernandez, who came on as well.
Let's have a word for Brentford, because there are people there who listen to the show, so hello to them. Brentford are doing very, very well. I worried that they might be in a relegation battle after the start they had, whether they might be, because they've been batting so far above their average for so long. But hey, look at them up there in 12th. What's happened?
So this was the match you were at, right? Having spoken about all the pubs on every corner, clearly you were there, unless you just stayed in the pub. Matt probably did.
But fair point.
Yeah, fair point made. For Brentford, for me, have always been one of those teams that I always thought I'd go and watch a game, which sounds ridiculous, but every time, maybe I got to see them twice in real life last season, but I always thought I'm going to be entertained when I go and see them. And of course, that's going to go one of two ways, isn't it? Spectacularly well, and you walk out of the ground thinking, that was the best since we've ever seen, and or it's going to fail miserably. And I just think this season, Brentford are tipping on the spectacularly well side as opposed to the failing miserably. And against Leeds, I think you're right. It was down to just where was the plan B coming from? And you mentioned Saiz, a name that we said so many times at the start of the season. Roof, how many people were singing the roof's on fire constantly in an annoying way at the start of the season too. So those names have dropped off. And Brentford may be beating the teams that they're going up against who have form against them too, and winning those games which they should win in respect of the form.
Well, Brentford's certainly using the margins. Their scouting network is extraordinary. I believe they'd also isolated Leeds' own Alioski, but weren't able, obviously, to beat Leeds to the punch on that. And set pieces, of course. Let's not talk about penalties for Brentford, because they missed one of those. How many gorgeous short corners were there this weekend?
There were quite a few, yeah.
I love them.
Left-back Barbe's delivery is just spectacular. He scored the goal, obviously, and then I saw him score that free kick against Bolton early in the season when he won 3-0 there, and yeah, he's got a sweet strike on him.
But to lose the quality of players that they lost at the start of the season, and the quality, particularly to Birmingham, to have gone and to replace them and still be there is testament, really, as you were saying, to those that they've got around the club bringing others in.
Yeah, and then they beat Birmingham the other week as well. I think we should just mention as well, Ryan Woods, his performance at the weekend was absolutely outstanding. They signed him from Shrewsbury for about £1 million, and that underlines their scouting network there to spot a player of his talent, and he'll end up in a Premier League, no doubt about it.
Okay, lots of love for Brentford. Let's go to Ipswich, who smashed Preston all over the place. These are two teams whose early season form has dropped off significantly. Four defeats on the spin for Preston now. They haven't won since September the 26th. Honeymoon over for Alex Neil, then?
Well, if he has got a defender to throw something at, was it six out or something ridiculous at the weekend? The injuries that Preston have suffered has done for Alex Neil. So I've got a great deal of sympathy for him in what he's had to... I know that's why you're a manager and you've got to deal with it, but they've had a rotten run of luck over injuries.
Yeah, and Bialkowski, how you say the Ipswich goalkeeper's name? He made some brilliant saves at the weekend as well. So they were in that game, and they were in the defeat to Wolves when they lost 3-2. They lost 3-2 against Brentford, who've been in form and beaten in nine. So they have been competitive still despite that run.
Okay, so there's no reason for Simon Grayson to be sitting there thinking, I could get it back. No, absolutely not. Let's talk about Mick McCarthy. Fifth longest serving Football League manager now. As we said, he just celebrated his fifth anniversary. Not hugely popular with the Ipswich fans, though, Matt.
No, and it all came to a head the other week, didn't it? Over Bersant Salina not being in the starting 11. He scored that free kick against Burton in the victory there and tore his shirt off, threw it in the stand, and then had to ask it back because the game hadn't finished yet.
I know you've spoken about Mick McCarthy's response to the fans wanting him on the pitch before, but it just shows what a delight it is to have him in Football Manager. Mick McCarthy, maybe if you might not want him at your club, but to have him there and to say, no, I'm the manager, I make decisions, he's on the pitch, and whatever you say will turn me the other way.
He is great, and he's also great value on the Football Manager Files, a Muddy Knees media-produced series of podcasts going behind the scenes of football management. Yeah, get all over that. That's on iTunes and all the
usual
places.
So you need him to stay in his job, then?
Well, thing is, we spoke to about 13 managers, and I think he's the only one still in a job. Most of them went within about 2 weeks of us talking to them. Chris Powell, within about 24 hours of us talking to him.
He'll be back.
Yeah, oh God, of course he'll be back. You can't keep him down. Ipswich in general, though, it should be recognised, massive, massive debts there, forced to live very much within their means. They're a local club and a league of sugar daddies, and their daddy is kind of sugar-free now, isn't he? It did invest quite a lot, not investing that much now. I've stretched this metaphor way too far, but what can you do with it?
Well, I was just going to reach for a jelly baby at that point, but thought that might be slightly cruel. Yeah, of course. And again, it's about communication from a board level, isn't it? About what means you have to live within, how well the manager is doing on those means. And we are spoilt rotten as fans, aren't we? And of course we want to chase a little bit of a dream a bit more. But if you just communicate that you've not got as much as everyone else and you are doing relatively well compared to what you've got in comparison to others, then I think fans sometimes understand that a bit more.
They are over £100 million in debt. And with that in mind, maybe seventh is actually quite good. We will continue this roundup after the break, and we're starting with Sunderland, so brace yourself. Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and this week there's no Fan League because of the international fixtures. But that's a good opportunity for you to download it. It's kind of like the football pools. You just get a little slip, 13 games, about 6 or 7 of Premier League, about 6 or 7 of the Football League, and then you just say home win, away win, or draw. And that's it. It only costs 20p for a line, and if you get more than 10 right, which I haven't done yet, you'll win some money. So have a look. It's Fan League on the App Store. And you can join the Totally Football League. Just find me, Ian McIntosh, and then make a request to join. I'll accept you straight away, because I've always liked you. Right, with deepest apologies to Middlesbrough fans, let's get you lot out of the way so we can slow down and look at the car crash. We were a bit worried about Gary Monk's side, weren't really living up to expectations, but that's three wins on the spin, Matt.
Yep, they're doing a lot better now.
Brilliant, thanks for coming.
It's the way to get them out of the way. So.
Eight goals for Britt Assombalonga, that makes him joint third highest goal scorer. That's kind of just within expectations for that fee, isn't it?
And I can legitimately get in Chelmsford City now because we've just signed Chris Assombalonga. And they all scored in the same weekend, last week or the week before, whenever it was. And so Chris was tweeting about Britt and just saying how brilliantly he's doing too. And having had a quick word with them, just, again, one of those real infectious people, as in so much as makes you smile, right, as opposed to giving me flu, which apparently you have. I'm pleased for him, and I think he'll be one of the key reasons that they'll do well. And I think they'll... I've got Cardiff going up via the playoffs, so they'd have to sneak one of those automatics, wouldn't they, Middlesbrough? Not entirely sure if they will.
Okay, well, I promise you, Middlesbrough fans, we will come back and do you in detail later, but time for Sunderland. Last week, Michael Cox was in the office after the main show trying to do some work, and the poor man couldn't get anything done because I was watching the Bolton-Sunderland tape and just screaming, oh my God, look at this, Coxie, look at this, they're so bad. There was one moment that just sort of summed up everything at the club. Mark Little, the Bolton right back, who was very impressive at the weekend, by the way, he burst into the Sunderland area. There was this mass of Sunderland shirts actually somehow, you know, did their job and got the ball off him. And you looked at it and you thought, right, that's a Bolton right back who's all the way up the pitch. His run's supported by four or five other Bolton players. There must be gaps all over the place. This is it. This is the moment of transition. The moment that Pep Guardiola lives for. The moment when your team goes bang into the space and we wrestle this game back.
Yeah.
And they just stood still. Honest to God, they all just sort of stood still and looked at each other with the ball in their own penalty area. And you're screaming at the screen thinking, this cannot be a second flight professional football team. The majority of those players having played Premier League football the season before, they were absolutely appalling. I don't think I've ever seen a worse team. And again, I remind everyone here, I'm a Southend fan. I've seen bad stuff.
Frightened rabbits. The Southend mentioned there, I know that a certain Phil Brown has been linked, hasn't he, to this job, said it would be a dream job for him. But what I found interesting this week was Nathan Jones, the Luton boss, being one of those outsiders being tipped to go to Sunderland. He perhaps would be the kind of manager that they need, but what they need is just a manager that they stick with. It's to have that instability, to not know as a player who you're coming into training next week and who's going to be there lining you up must be unsettling. And no wonder when they're in a situation like that, they're going, what do we do?
I'm now at a point where I'm starting to think maybe Peter Reid, because A, it can't get any worse.
Mm.
And B, is it now at a point where they're just in pieces? They've just forgotten what they're supposed to be doing for a living, and you need someone to come in, shout them, cuddle them, take them out for a pint, try and get some kind of team ethic going, because yeah, they are as broken as I've ever seen a football team.
And Grayson's as good a manager that they could get, really.
Yeah,
he was a shrewd appointment. It's definitely not a manager thing. It can't be blamed on the individuals. They've had seven permanent managers since the start of the 2012-13 season and a 20% win ratio since then. So, you know, it's a succession of managers that haven't worked, which suggests there's a culture at the club where there's something wrong.
Yeah, and you're looking at other names listed with a Paul Hurst, who's done so well at Shrewsbury. But you think, you know, you walk a young or youngish idealistic manager who has very firm beliefs about team ethic and hard work and getting everyone together. And on paper, it's a great idea. And in reality, it's a guy who was in non-league not long ago, walking into a dressing room of people earning £50,000-£60,000 a week. And you wonder if they'd even listen.
And yet, have just taken 50% wage cuts on that as well, which you wonder whether that's been a factor in their form this season.
Yeah. I'd give it to Peter Reid.
At least Peter Reid, you would hope, knows what he's walking into.
Yeah.
And any other manager that we've just mentioned from Nathan and Paul as well. Yeah, great managers. But what they're walking into and what assurances they're given and whether those assurances are then followed through is another matter entirely. Whereas Peter Reid, you think, not that he'd treat it as a bit of a jolly, because he wouldn't, because it's a club that he clearly, clearly loves. But at least he knows it's pretty obvious. And whether he has that conversation or not, he's in it for that length of time. And he'll do the best that he can for that moment. It's not kind of make or break for his career, is it?
Right. Well, let's hope that he does, because I want to see the behind-the-scenes documentary of that, having enjoyed the last one so much. Right, we've got to rattle on. We're running out of time. Let's move to Nottingham Forest QPR. Nottingham Forest 4-0 winners here. Comedian and host of the new Reservoir Red Dogs podcast, Matt Ford, who was last spotted winning the hearts and minds of Man United fans on the Totally Football Show, he said of Forest this weekend, "I've always felt lucky to be a Forest fan, as we're a special club. We've had some awful times, but this is the most positive it's been in years." Is that true?
We had the brilliant Max come in from Match Day with Max. Have you seen? He's the young guy that records all these YouTube videos and has become a bit of a sensation. The club let him go in and he came over to Channel 5 to sit with us too. And he was just bouncing off the walls. It might have been all the sugar that I gave him. But he was saying that everyone's approachable. The players wanted to talk to him. And this might sound a bit daft, but you've got a kid essentially coming in and doing these interviews, brilliant interviews, but they've opened up the whole club to him. And that just seems the ethos that Mark Warburton's taken into that side is just being very open and actually very communicative with the fans and letting them enjoy the ride and be part of it.
The mood certainly seems to have changed. Matt, you fraternise with a lot of Nottingham Forest fans.
Yeah, I do, yeah. They're really excited about the way they've been playing, and they've got some good young players coming through as well. Byron McKay, what signing he's been from Rangers, where Warburton worked with him previously. So a great stat actually at the weekend from your Football on Five stats man, Christian.
Yeah.
Was it Tyler Walker, who scored more goals for Forest against QPR, got a brace on Saturday, than his dad Des scored in 408 appearances for the club.
Nice.
Christian is like subtitles. So again, we've got this bank of 12 TV screens in front of us, and every so often he'll just come out, you'll just hear a stat come out of him, which is completely random. And then he tweets it, of course. He tests it on us first, whether we all enjoy the stat, and then that's whether he takes it out to his wider audience on Twitter. But he's well worth a follow.
And that also helps with the feel-good factor as well, like the son of a legend coming into the team. It would feel like, you know, that's one of yours. But what of QPR? They beat Wolves and they beat Sheffield United. No one saw that coming. And then they go and get gubbed by Forest.
I want Ollie to do well.
Of course, everyone does. He's lovely.
But it's still my favourite quote of all time, which I don't think I can repeat now. I won't, but anyway, look up Ian Holloway quotes and it'll be one of those amongst it.
Is it about mating season?
I'm not saying anything about anything. But he, again, you treat as you find, right? So I was supposed to do a 10-minute interview with him, and about 3.5 hours later, I was still chatting to him. And he's done the old bring in legends at the club. Fernandez, who's been doing the circuit recently, I don't know if you've heard that the QPR owner has been doing quite a few long, lengthy interviews, and he talks about bringing Ollie back and what he thought it would mean and whether financially they have enough cash to bobble around. And he'll get things right, I would like to think, at Queen's Park Rangers, another of those clubs that you want to do well. Grafters.
True story. 12 years ago, I produced a big budget podcast with Ian Holloway and Barry Fry, hosted by Diane Stewart of Sky Sports News. And
did she get a word in edgeways with us too?
It was like a half football chat, half game show. And we couldn't get anyone interested because at that point, no one thought podcasts were a real thing. But it was brilliant. One of the great undiscovered things.
Have you still got the recording?
I don't know. I'm going to have to try and dig it out. It's really, like, I'm not just saying it because I was involved in it, but it's really good. Anyway, I'm still upset that no one went for it. Let's rush on. Time's running out. Bolton against Norwich. Bolton, most people have Bolton to be relegated back in September. Matt, they're unbeaten in 5. And due to some weird quirk of circumstance, we've watched almost all of those games.
Yeah, you asked me if they could get out of it last week and I said no, and then they go and beat Norwich to go and beat it in 5. So definitely picking up form, and you know, Adam Armstrong scored at the weekend, Gary Medine getting a few goals in the team as well now.
Norwich haven't got over that Arsenal game at all. They beat Ipswich, they nearly beat the Gunners, and since that lad from the youth team did them in extra time, they've lost 3 on the spin. The first international break of the season, Daniel Fark sorted him right out. He needs this international break again, doesn't he?
He does. I don't think they score enough goals. That's the main problem, isn't it? Cameron Jerome's got 1 in 13 matches. Nelson Oliveira, who's been in and out of the team a little bit, he's got 5. And there was that celebration on the opening day of the season where he ran over to make his point to Daniel Farke after not being selected in the first 11. It's almost like he was preempting his troubles for the rest of the season.
Right, producer Ben is scrawling one line on each game on my screen as the time runs out. Barnsley against Birmingham. Great win for Barnsley. Rising back up the table. They've lost so much talent there. Alfie Mawson, Conor Horahan, and the list goes on. But they keep plugging away, don't they?
Yeah, I kept my powder dry on this one, but I think Paul Heckingbottom's probably the best shout for Sunderland.
Ooh.
Because they need the manager that can work with young players, and they've got the youngest squad in the division. They're starting, the average age of the starting 11 against Birmingham was only 23, and that's what Sunderland needs, someone who can bring players through from their youth setup.
I'm running on to the end of his one line and saying, why would he go to Sunderland? Again, maybe it's all the arguments that we had previously before, but he seems to be doing the job there.
That noise, dear listener, you can hear in the background, as well as all the Barnsley listeners screaming at once. Steve Cotterill had two good days at Birmingham. First was when he decided to sit out Hull away, thus avoiding association with the 6-1 defeat. The next was to beat Cardiff in his first game, but he hasn't won since. And Jamie Redknapp was saying this weekend that Cotterill will now know what a hard job this is. But it shouldn't be that hard, should it? Because Redknapp Senior spent about $15 million on Brentford.
Well, that's the guy. Birmingham are kind of like, you know, when you go to a train station and you can smell the Cornish pasties and you can see the Cornish pasties and you think, oh, they'll be great Cornish pasties. And then you go and eat one and it's kind of like overpriced, a bit dried up, shriveled, and gives you plenty of repeat. I think perhaps sometimes that's been Birmingham this season, but I need them to improve because the producer of Channel 5's programme is a Birmingham fan, and we have a stinker, an absolute stinker in the office if they don't win.
Greatest Birmingham metaphor ever heard on air. Finally, Millwall against Burton. Millwall are a weird club because they win the games you'd expect them to lose and lose the ones you'd expect them to win, primarily Burton at home, which they managed to lose even though Burton only had one shot. Do we need to worry about Millwall, or they're just going to sort of plug away and be fine?
Well, straight back to what was brought up at the start of the show and refereeing decisions. That was a poor one to send Jed Wallace off at the weekend.
Awful.
And I think they probably would have gone on and maybe snatched a win there if he hadn't gone. So
I thought Neil Harris was very decent about that decision in that he didn't kick tables around afterwards. Nigel Clough, another one who might get linked to Sunderland. How long is he going to stick around with Burton?
Well, despite, as you say, the awful refereeing decision at the weekend. Did you say awful? I just dropped awful in there. I'm happy for Burton that they got a win. Again, a good club that do things right, and I want to see them stay up. So cling on to those 3 points any time that they can.
That is all we've got time for. In fact, that's about 5 minutes more than we've got time for. If you want to get in touch on our Twitter, it's @TheTotallyShow, and on Facebook, @TheTotallyFootballShow. Let us know where you want us to send Matt as well, because we haven't decided yet. We always wait for your input. Thank you so much for coming in, Caroline Barker. You've been brilliant.
We're taking over 10 minutes over what you're supposed to do.
But it's all good stuff. It's all good content.
Is it? I blooming love the Championship. But I also love League One and Two, so if you want to do an extra hour and a half,
we'll get you back in.
No, just now.
Oh,
about
right.
The FA Cup.
Producer Ben will explode.
Because I know you'll watch the FA Cup.
How dare you. Matt Stanger, thank you so much. You've been brilliant too, and I really mean that.
Oh, it's the first time you've ever said that.
I know, it's just because you're feeling poorly. And thank you, dear listener, for coming along. Remember to subscribe and review, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email us at sales@muddyneesmedia.com.